You're going to love this. Just love it.
I would not believe that guy if I were you.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
No, not scared.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle.
From the Pacifica Radio Network in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, People Powered Radio. In 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 FM in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California. Up in Oregon on 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Central Coast and 106.7 FM KSO in Cottage Grove. In Pennsylvania on 93 FM WLRI in Lancaster. In Hawaii on 88.5 FM KAKU, the voice of Maui. In Ohio on WGRN 94.1 FM in Columbus. And in Minneapolis, St. Paul on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. And streaming coast to coast and around the globe, all over the place on Progressive Voices, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation Radio, Free Brooklyn, GDPR Nashville, Detour Talk in East Tennessee, Radio Monterey, and yes, 5 days a week, blanketing planet Earth on Radio Sputnik. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us for another thrilling, action-packed adventure that we call The Bradcast. Or reality-based radio. Take your pick. Welcome to it. Glad to have you here today with us. And greetings, Desi Doyen, our producer. Hope you're doing well today as well.
Yes, I'm here.
Well, we'll find out how well you're doing. While many Democrats have been celebrating Bernie Sanders' concession and endorsement of Hillary Clinton on Tuesday, several major news polls out on Wednesday show that Donald Trump is not only gaining on Hillary Clinton nationally, but he is also neck and neck with her in several very key swing states. Actually, Donald Trump is now ahead in some of those swing states, though within the margin of error. We will get to that in a moment, as well as a court orders a revote. That's right, a do-over in one recent presidential contest. Attorney Ernie Kenning will join us shortly to discuss that. So a lot ahead. But first, as we've been spending quite a bit of time discussing the draft of the Democratic Party's new platform as Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton surrogates emerged after the weekend from their meeting in Orlando, Florida, and the Democratic Platform Committee's final draft is said to be by both the Sanders and Clinton camps as the, quote, most progressive platform in party history. I haven't stopped to comment yet on the fact that those progressive changes in that document, in that Democratic Party platform, I believe are only there, frankly, because Bernie Sanders did not bow out of the race back when so many people wanted him to. Many Democrats, mostly Clinton supporting Democrats, had urged him to drop out weeks ago, but instead he was able to use the leverage that he earned from those 22 victories, 22 state victories and 1,900 convention delegates that he won during the primary process for leverage to insist that the party move to the left on all of the issues that they now have. At least in the party's platform, which will officially be adopted at the end of the month in Philadelphia at the Democratic National Convention. So that party's central document, the Democratic Party platform, has now moved the party in the direction of progressive policies thanks to Bernie Sanders. Thanks to Bernie Sanders and thanks to Bernie Sanders supporters hanging in there. It's more progressive now than it has been in decades, maybe even ever, on everything from healthcare to college tuition, student debt, climate change. You would agree, Desi?
Yes, definitely.
Trade policy, criminal justice reform, marijuana, and much more.
And that's probably why party and establishment Democrats were so anxious for Bernie to drop out of
the
race.
To keep them from moving us and committing us to the... Now, we should say they're not really committed to those things in the party platform. Well, not even just a draft, but even once it's finalized, it's just the platform. And parties routinely ignore their own platforms. But it sets the stage for where the party wants to move, and if Hillary Clinton becomes the nominee, as expected, and if she becomes the president of the United States, as many Democrats expect, then that's what they have to work from. And they can hold the president, the Congress, accountable. Democrats in those bodies, in any event, can hold them accountable to say, hey, this is what our party stands for. This is what we fought for, and we expect you to do it. So that's on the Democratic side. But in the meantime, just in case you are wondering, the Republican Party has also gone to work on their party's platform document in advance of next week's GOP convention in Cleveland. And while Democrats are finally moving back into a progressive direction, thanks in no small part to Bernie and his supporters, after at least three decades, by the way, of moving rightward. While that's going on the Democratic side, on the Republican side, well, the platform there, the Republican Party platform, is, what you sadly might still expect. And the Republican Party is doing, well, I guess what it is that they do. According to Melanie Mason over at LA Times, in the midst of an exceptional political year, as she describes it, Republicans stuck with conservative orthodoxy on same-sex marriage, drug policy, and other social issues while crafting their 2016 platform. Members of the GOP platform committee rebuffed efforts by moderate Republicans to strip the document of references to traditional marriage and opposition to adoption by gay couples. Proponents of the more gay-friendly language, most prominently New York delegate Annie Dickerson, became visibly frustrated by their repeatedly stymied efforts during the platform talks over the weekend. Over the past couple of days. Stop repelling gays, for God's sake, Dickerson had to say. But others blanched at Dickerson's push. One delegate was loudly applauded when he chastised her for implying that those who don't share her belief are bigots. Rachel Hoff, the first openly gay delegate to serve on the panel, was near tears as she pled for support of an amendment that was neutral on same-sex marriage. It was just neutral. And it still was not allowed. She and others were seeking to soften the language on LGBT issues. She stated that Republicans held a diversity of views on the issues. Hoff told her fellow delegates, freedom means freedom for everyone, including gays and lesbians. But her proposal to soften language on LGBT issues failed, you'll be shocked to learn.
Well, you know, that's the GOP building a bridge to the 1950s.
Freedom means freedom for everyone. They pretend that they're in favor of freedom. They ain't in favor of freedom.
They never were.
Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon, she's a piece of work. She's co-chair of the committee. She said that the vote was a reaffirmation of the GOP's longtime position on marriage, but said that that did not mean the party was shutting out gay and lesbian members like Hoff. She's still welcome in the party, Fallon said. Everybody is.
We just hate you, that's all.
Exactly right. You could be here. We'd love to have your vote. We're just not going to do anything for you. We're not going to support anything you believe in.
We're going to try to stop you in your life and every step of the way. Welcome.
Yep. Delegates also rejected a call for the legalization of medical marijuana. They blocked language that would call for assessment of the consequences of the, quote, failure of drug prohibition. Gavin Newsom, the Democratic lieutenant governor of California out here, saw what was going on, and he tweeted, post-Orlando, after the shootings when 49 were killed at an LGBT nightclub, Donald Trump was saying he was the only one to protect LGBT Americans And yet the GOP platform just released says conversion therapy is okay.
Wow.
Yeah. And for those who don't know, conversion therapy, this is what these right-wingers recommend for gay people. If they only go get therapy, they will learn to not be gay.
They'll be ungayed.
They'll be ungayed. Because, you know, it's just a choice. It's just a choice. The way I might choose to like women, I guess it's a free choice. I could choose to like men if I wanted to. Because I can just choose.
But of course, we should also note, on a serious note, that conversion therapy is actually quite damaging to, especially to teenagers, and go ahead.
Well, no, this is what, Lieutenant Governor Newsom adds in a second quote, that LGBT kids who are forced to go through conversion therapy are 8 times more likely to commit suicide.
There you go.
Yeah. Newsom adds, this is sick. But that's not all. The GOP platform will also declare, this is the Republican Party, mind you, the Republican Party will declare internet pornography a, quote, public health crisis. Under an amendment that was added to the draft party platform on Monday in Cleveland, the internet must not become a safe haven for predators. The provision states, pornography, with its harmful effects, especially on children, has become a public health crisis that is destroying the lives of millions, destroying their lives. We encourage states to continue to fight this public menace and pledge our commitment to children's safety and well-being. We applaud the social networking sites that bar sex offenders from participating. We urge energetic prosecution of child pornography, which closely linked to human trafficking. The amendment passed with little debate. But pornography is a health crisis, a public health crisis, says the GOP. Meanwhile, Ian Boudreau on the Twitters notes 7,239 people have been killed by pornography this year already. Then he adds, wait, no, that's guns. Our friend LOLGOP over on the Twitters says, things the GOP will protect us from: same-sex marriage, porn, medical pot, and health insurance. Things it won't protect us from: 32,000 gun deaths a year. Yep. In the meantime, while the nation was stunned and grieving what happened in Dallas last week, this happened on Friday. And I've been trying to get to this, haven't had a chance with everything that's been going on. But on Friday, on the day that everyone was figuring out what the hell was going on after 12 Dallas police were shot, 5 of them killed by a single lone maniac with a high-powered weapon. While that was going on and the nation was reeling from that on Friday, 10 states, all run by Republicans, decided to sue the federal government over rules requiring public schools to allow transgender students to use restrooms and locker rooms conforming to their gender identity. The lawsuit filed on Friday in federal court in Nebraska. The other states involved are Arkansas, Kansas, Michigan, Montana, North Dakota, Ohio, South Carolina, South Dakota, and Wyoming. And if you are a listener in one of those states, that's what your government is doing. That's what your government is spending time and your taxpayer dollars to do. To sue the federal government over guidance about the use of bathrooms and locker rooms
by children.
Yeah. Nebraska Attorney General Doug Peterson says in a news release on Friday that the U.S. Education Department and Justice Department have circumvented established law and the process for changing existing law. Peterson also says the rule takes away the authority of local school districts to deal with such issues on an individualized basis. Now, what he's saying is local schools can decide how this goes. They can decide. They should be able to decide who they will be discriminating against. Because, you know, you might have local issues where we really need to discriminate against people in this town, just not the next one over. jackasses. All right. Meantime, security fears mount ahead of the GOP convention. You think this is potentially getting quite scary, to be frank. Concerns over security in Cleveland have been ramping up ahead of next week's Republican National Convention, according to CNN, and are now further inflamed by recent incidents of racial violence that have racked the country. With Donald Trump expected to formally accept the GOP's presidential nomination, numerous protest groups for and against the billionaire developer are preparing to launch dozens of rallies and marches across the Ohio City, which is anticipating some 50,000 visitors for the GOP's convention. Now, of course, we saw that this was coming months and months ago. There was concerns about this throughout the primary. Trump's campaign, as CNN notes, was marked by racial tensions, spasms of violence inside his events and outside his events. But now heightening tensions and the convention arriving amidst a rising national tide of anger against police violence in the deaths of two African Americans last week, and anxieties tied to the deadly ambush and killing of five officers in Dallas last week, has got a lot of people on edge in Ohio, in Cleveland, and for good reason. The state's open carry gun laws have the head of Bikers for Trump, for example, telling CNN that Cleveland streets could turn into, quote, the OK Corral.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Now, here's the deal. The guns are not permitted inside the arena at the convention. For obviously good reasons, although if you listen to the Republicans and the Republican platform and the NRA and all the Republican officials, they tell us that guns make everybody safer and that gun-free zones like what will be the convention center in Cleveland, and that makes everybody less safe. And yet, for some reason, they have decided to ban guns inside the convention center itself. Okay, that's good. However, Ohio does not regulate the carrying of guns. So that means, as CNN points out, that while the entrance to the convention's 1.7 square mile secure zone around the arena, they will be prohibited. People who are in that secure zone will be prohibited from bringing weapons like swords and hatchets and axes, slingshots and BB guns and pellet guns and metal knuckles. But they will be allowed to openly hold live firearms.
You can't bring the sword or the can opener, but you can bring the AR-15.
Yeah.
What could possibly go wrong?
Exactly. Chris Cox, the Bikers for Trump, said on Tuesday that we're anticipating a victory dance, but it sounds like there's a lot of agitators and a lot of troublemakers coming to town. What happens remains to be seen, he says, but you can definitely count on the Bikers for Trump standing with the police department in the event they need it. So they'll be helping them. They'll be there. Maybe they'll have live weapons. Bikers for Trump will help the police. And remember, this police department is currently under federal oversight by the Department of Justice, after being cited in 2014 for a, quote, pattern of or practice of the use of excessive force. Remember 12-year-old Tamir Rice? That was Cleveland when he was killed in, what, 2.5 seconds by a police guy who pulled up to the park, saw this 12-year-old, and just, boom, shot him dead. That's the Cleveland Police Department. They're the ones who are going to be out there dealing with whatever nightmares are to come in a state that allows open carry even during this presidential convention and the tens of thousands of people that are coming. Mind-blowing to me. Doctors and surgeons at the Cleveland Clinic have also have been told to remain on call and to be prepared for a situation in which the hospital is cut off from the outside, cut off from outside aid and supplies for the convention's 4 days, according to a report from Stat News, which covers healthcare issues. One of these groups said that they were less concerned by the potential for clashes with anti-Trump demonstrators than they were about a lone wolf attack like the one that rocked Dallas. So, I mean, with everything that's going on, this will take one person, one guy, one lone wolf to start firing, and then what happens in Cleveland?
Remember what the Dallas Police Chief David Brown said about when everyone's carrying a gun, if someone starts shooting, it's very difficult for the police to understand and figure out who's the shooter.
Yeah. But don't worry, the Bikers for Trump will be helping the police. They'll all have guns. What could possibly go wrong? This is what's happening next week in Cleveland. We can only hope that things remain safe. But the fact is, nobody really even knows what the hell's going to go on inside the convention at this point. Normally, we have some idea what the convention schedule will be. At this point, we have no real idea what's actually going to happen inside the convention, much less what's going to happen outside the convention with the protesters and so forth. So that's the Republican convention coming up in Cleveland. The Democratic convention is the following week and is only slightly less concerning, to be frank, at this point. One lone wolf, one jackass is all it takes. Speaking of one jackass, a member of a Canadian... No, it's not what you thought it was, Desi. That wasn't the segue I was going to make. Although we can. You want to do that? All right, let's do it. This one jackass segue works here, too. Actually, in this case, though, it's two jackasses. You may have already heard this quote, Bill O'Reilly speaking, I believe, yesterday with Donald Trump, asking him, well, here, it speaks for itself.
There are still some Black Americans who believe that the system is biased against them, the American system. Because they're Black, they don't get the same kind of shot, they don't get the same kind of fairness that whites do. What do you say to them?
Well, I've been saying even against me, the system is rigged.
So, yeah, not only do bad Black people have it bad, even Donald Trump has it bad. It's even rigged against him. Now, a lot of people have been focusing on Trump's comment saying he, like Black people, has the system rigged against him. Now, that quote is a little bit out of context if you listen to the entire thing. Basically, Donald Trump says that his solution to the problem, he calls Barack Obama the divider in chief. And if you heard our program, if you heard the broadcast yesterday, that's one of the reasons I wanted to play that extended portion from Obama's remarks at the memorial down in Dallas on Tuesday, was because it was anything but divisive. It was moving. It was full of common sense. It was full of reality. It was, anything but divisive. And then, you know, you got these Republicans and Donald Trump and Bill O'Reilly, who's even worse, running around saying he's a divider. He's dividing the nation with his rhetoric. Well, that is true unless you listen to his actual rhetoric and you find out it's completely false. So a lot of people are talking about Donald Trump, talking about how this poor billionaire, if he is a billionaire, how this poor billionaire has the system rigged against him, poor guy. Actually, in truth, and he says the way that he would fix it is the real problem here is not bias, it's a lack of spirit. That's actually what he said. We don't have spirit. He says he would be the cheerleader for this country. He actually said that. That was it. Spirit. He said about five or six different times, we need spirit in this country. We're just not spirited enough. That would solve the racial divide that has gripped this nation for centuries. In any event, they've been focusing on Trump. I was, when I heard that quote, and I went back and listened to the rest of it, because the rest of it is even worse, I was interested in what Bill O'Reilly had to say when he said there is still some African Americans who think the system is biased against them. Like, can you believe it? There are still just a few, there are still some who think there is some sort of systemic racial bias against African Americans in this country? Where would they possibly get that idea? Jesus. But the original segue for one jackass was not meant for Donald Trump, but was meant for this guy from Canada, this member of a Canadian singing quartet who changed a lyric in his country's own national anthem and held up a sign proclaiming "All Lives Matter" during a pregame performance at the All-Star game, at the baseball game on Tuesday, the 87th All-Star game in San Diego. The Tenors, they used to call themselves the Canadian Tenors, now they're just the Tenors, a group based in British Columbia. They caused a stir at Petco Park, according to AP, when Remigio Pereira's changed the verse of one of the songs of the Canadian national anthem. In a statement issued during the game, the group blamed the changes solely on Pereira. He had held up a sign that said, "All Lives Matter," and he sang the altered lyrics to the national anthem while the other three singers wordlessly harmonized. The band said Pereira will not perform with the Tenors until further notice. They called his actions disrespectful and shameful. This was midway through the anthem. Pereira unexpectedly sang, quote, "We're all brothers and sisters, all lives matter," to the great, instead of the normal lyric, which is nothing like that, which is, "With glowing hearts we see thee rise, the true north, strong and free." So he had this sign, "All Lives Matter." He changed the lyric on the back. It said, "United We Stand." And the group has apologized. But of course, "All Lives Matter" has become this online response recently to Black Lives Matter supporters and protesters, to the entire movement. As if Black Lives Matter, as if that phrase, that saying, that slogan somehow means nobody else's life matters. And these jackasses who don't understand that, no, it doesn't mean that all of the other lives doesn't matter. I saw someone on Twitter, and my apologies that I don't have the person who tweeted this, but said it is akin to when someone says, "Save the rainforest." They're not saying, "To hell with all the other types of forests, burn those down." The phrase, as AP notes, has been perceived, the "All Lives Matter" has been perceived to use reductive reasoning to trivialize the problems specifically facing blacks. Of course, if you asked Bill O'Reilly about that, he would agree. Rush Limbaugh calls Black Lives Matters terrorists, a terrorist group. Bill O'Reilly calls them a hate group. And yet, he's the most popular, Rush Limbaugh, the most popular guy on the radio. Bill O'Reilly, the most popular guy on cable news. And Democrats are laughing all the way to the bank, thinking, hey, everything is swell. There's nothing to worry about now that Donald Trump is going to be the nominee. Why worry? We'll destroy him. Even Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who has come under fire for calling Trump a faker. Trump has said she must resign, the Supreme Court justice, the notorious RBG, as some call her. Even she did not take Trump with the seriousness which I have been saying everyone else should from day one, that he got in the race in June of last year. Even she, as CNN's Joan Biskupic reports from a follow-up interview with the 83-year-old Supreme Court justice, when asked about her criticism of Trump's candidacy, she said, "Well, at first I thought it was funny to think that there's a possibility that he could be president, ... and her voice trailed off gloomily," says Biskupic at CNN. There is a reason for concern, and I keep saying this, and boy, do I hope I'm wrong about this. I hope, you know, I was, yes, the guy or one of the guys who said to take Trump very seriously from day one when everyone else thought he was a joke. I turned out to be very right. I hope that I'm not the guy who turns out to be right here. But if we keep looking at facts, if we keep looking at numbers, this is, after all, reality-based radio, as I said. Here's what the facts and numbers are. New poll. Hillary Clinton leads Donald Trump nationally among registered voters now by just 3 points, according to McClatchy Marist poll released on Wednesday. In the latest McClatchy Marist poll, in the last one, I should say, back in April, Clinton led Trump by 9 points. Now that lead has shrunk to 3. When you add in the Libertarian and Green Party candidates, she has a 5-point lead, still pretty much within the margin of error there. The survey in this case began on the day that FBI Director James Comey announced that the FBI would not recommend bringing charges against Hillary Clinton regarding the her private email server. The good news for Hillary Clinton is that despite a very rough week, she still has a narrow edge, says Lee Meringhoff. He's the director of the Marist Institute for Public Opinion in New York. He adds, the bad news is that these issues concerning Hillary Clinton don't seem to be going away. Clinton's lead over Trump also took a hit in the NBC SurveyMonkey weekly tracking poll for the past 2 weeks. In Tuesday's tracking poll, Clinton had a 3-point lead over Trump, down from a 5-point lead the previous week. So that tracks with the Marist poll. Reason to be concerned if you're a Democrat or if you're American? I would say yes, there is reason to be concerned. But of course, as we always point out, that's only national polling. We don't have national elections in this country. Ultimately, the national polls don't really matter. What matters is the states and how each state votes, and specifically how the states that are the swingiest of swing states actually vote. And in that case, we've got even worse news. Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are now running neck and neck in Florida, as well as Ohio and Pennsylvania, according to a Quinnipiac University survey that took stock of the three swing states. The poll marks an 11-point difference from a month ago in the Sunshine State in Florida. Trump now leads Clinton in Florida, according to the Quinnipiac University poll, 42-39. Now, that is within the margin of error, but Trump now leads Hillary Clinton, an 11-point drop for Clinton since last month. A month ago, Clinton led 47-39%. Now she's losing 42-39% in the state of Florida. When you add third-party candidates in that case, Trump's edge extends to 5 points. He then has a 5-point lead over Hillary Clinton in the state of Florida. And in the two other states polled in that Quinnipiac survey, Ohio and Pennsylvania, both absolutely key swing states. Pennsylvania is a must-win, really, for Democrats. In those two states, Clinton and Trump are now pretty much tied. They are tied at 41% each in Ohio, and Trump leads by 2 points in Pennsylvania. All of those leads are, as I note, within the margin of error for that particular poll in Florida and Pennsylvania and in Ohio. But the NBC News Wall Street Journal poll released Wednesday afternoon found Clinton and Trump virtually deadlocked in Ohio, and I'm sorry, in Iowa, and yes, in Ohio as well. All these polls are saying the same thing. Should we notice that? NBC did find that Clinton enjoyed a 9-point lead in their poll. She enjoyed a 9-point lead in Pennsylvania, unlike the Quinnipiac poll, which found that much closer race with Trump up by 2 in Pennsylvania. A new survey of likely voters in Wisconsin by the Marquette University Law School poll found Clinton topping Trump by just 4 points in Wisconsin. Some positive news here for Clinton in the swing state of Colorado. A Monmouth poll released Wednesday finds her enjoying a 13-point lead in Colorado, for whatever that's worth. But man, yeah, okay. And, you know, one of the other reasons I point these out is because when you have races that are this close, I know how easy it is to game the electoral system. You know, we've had a lot of talk about fraud in the electoral system this year in the presidential primaries. We have examined a lot of them here on the broadcast and at bradblog.com. And I have found at least the bulk of it and the claims by Sanders supporters about voter fraud and claiming Hillary stole the primary and the DNC stole the primary. I found the bulk of that to be very badly sourced, very misleading, and often using irresponsible numbers, irresponsible reporting, disprovable assertions. There's a lot of problems out there, but this suggestion that it was stolen by Hillary or DNC, the evidence, at least that I have seen, simply does not support that claim. But now, one court has looked at the evidence of fraud and has called for a presidential election do-over. That story is next on the broadcast. That bumper music will make sense to you maybe in a minute. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. A court of law has finally looked at one of these recent presidential elections this year, about which there have been many concerns of election fraud, and that court has decided to toss out the results of the election entirely and run it again. So, yes, all the noise that folks have been making this year about fraud in presidential elections may have finally paid off. Trouble is, the presidential election in question is in Austria, where the nation's constitutional court recently tossed out the results of that nation's presidential election. Ernest A. Canning recently wrote about this fine mess for us at bradblog.com, and he's here to talk to us about what happened and explain it. Ernie has for many years served as our legal analyst at bradblog.com. He's a retired attorney, author, Vietnam veteran, and hasn't been able to write much for us over recent months at bradblog.com, as he's been serving as a senior advisor to Veterans for Bernie at vetsforbernie.org. Ernie Canning, welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
How you doing, Brad?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. Okay, so first explain, let's discuss the general contours of this Austrian presidential election. I know it took place in May. Who were the two main candidates running and from what parties? And then we'll get into what has happened since that election in May.
Well, there were two candidates. One is the Austria Green Party candidate, Alexander Van der Bellen, who defeated Norbert Hofer of mm-hmm. Austria's far-right Freedom Party by just under 31,000 votes. When I say far right, this is a party that was founded by former Nazis, so it gives you a real good idea about what was, you know, politically involved in the election. And what's happening now is that the losing candidate, Hofer, mm-hmm. Who's the, you know, the quasi-Nazi, is getting a second bite at the apple because the court has ruled that mm-hmm. Several of the districts, not all of them, but several of the districts, violated the strict rules that Austria has for the handling and counting of mail-in ballots.
And I want to talk about what specifically happened and what didn't. But just to set the full contour, so you got this, the Green Party, which is the more progressive, clearly, of the two, and the Freedom Party, which is that right-wing, actually a Nazi party of sorts. And going into this race, the pre-election polls had predicted that the right-wing candidate, Hofer, that he was going to win. But then when they actually ended up counting the results, well, good news for progressives, it was the Green Party's Van der Bellen who won. Do I understand that correct?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the pre-election polls. I didn't read that in mm-hmm. because I just read the decision. Mm-hmm. But I know that in this particular case, although it doesn't directly relate to the reasons for the decision, press had, even prior to closure of the polls, had prematurely announced that Hofer was winning this, and it turned out Hofer ended up losing. At least according to the official count.
So the good news for people who are not Nazis is that the progressive candidate won. That would have been the good news. Do they use hand-marked paper ballots in their elections out there in Austria?
Well, I'm not sure what they use at the polls. I know that the Austria Constitution has a constitutional requirement for complete transparency of the count, and this particular problem was strictly having to do with the mail-in ballot and the procedures for mail-in ballots, which they have to be not only hand-counted or, you know, counted in person so you can verify it, but they have two people at each district, election officials, the chief election official and assistant, who must take part in each of these phases, both of opening, slitting open the ballots, opening the ballots to verify that, and then to verify that these, in fact, envelopes, which are signed envelopes, contain the ballots, and then to take part in the count. And what happened in this instance was that there were about 70,000 ballots at stake where both individuals were not present for personally counting the ballots, and because of that, there was a question of whether or not the count was transparent within their rules.
So it's a race ultimately decided by 31,000 votes, yet 70,000 ballots were opened by not two people, not two observers who are supposed to be there when it comes to the vote-by-mail ballots. Is someone alleging fraud? Is there evidence of actual fraud, that the results were miscounted, that the ballots were flipped? Is there anything like that that the Austrian court found when they tossed out? Because that's what they've done now, right? They've just tossed out the election, the original election results. They say these are no good. We're going to completely rerun. We're going to have a second presidential election because of whatever happened here, correct?
Well, the interesting thing, in fact, I think it's probably the most powerful statement comes out of this case, because if it was applied here in the United States, most of our elections would have to be redone. It really, as far as the Austria Constitutional Court was concerned, it's irrelevant whether or not there was actual manipulation. The fact is that if you had enough ballots that could have been manipulated because it was not a completely transparent count, then they're going to set it aside. You have to strictly comply with these procedures because the core issue is transparency in the actual vote count. They have to know that it was accurate, and if that was applied here in the United States, where we count most votes electronically, either by touchscreens or by the optical scan systems, and no human being actually counts the ballots, the mere possibility that it would that the count could have been manipulated is enough in Austria to overturn the result.
So to be clear, in Austria, nobody came in with proof of a stolen election. They didn't say, look, all of these ballots have been swapped out, have been changed, have been miscounted. All they did was came in and said there could have been fraud because there was not the proper amount of oversight for the 70,000 ballots. There could have been fraud. Therefore, the election result is no longer valid. Is that what happened?
That's basically what happened. And basically what I'm not so sure that the party challenging it did not, you know, at least claim that that there was, you know, that he suspected some type of manipulation. What the court ruled is whether there was or was not manipulation is irrelevant. You don't have to address that issue. The mere fact that you didn't follow the procedures, the burden is to show on the government to show that they have conducted a transparent count that they can verify that the result was the proper one.
Wow, what a standard. What a standard for democracy. I guess maybe we need to start calling Austria the world's greatest democracy. Now, to be clear, so they're not calling for a recount of the existing votes. They're calling for a revote. A recount wouldn't do any good because they'd come up with the same results. What they're saying is the counting was not overseeable, was not properly carried out, and so the mere possibility of fraud that could have taken place is enough to call off the entire election and rerun
but
it again.
Only because there was a sufficient number of votes in question. Mm-hmm. If it had been, for example, 20,000 votes that, you know, if it would not have made a difference, then the election would stand regardless, because even if all 20,000 went to Hofer, he still loses. So It was because the number's high enough that the only way they can remedy this was to order a new election. And I know that, particularly with vote by mail, and you know we have that in, with everybody in Oregon. Mm-hmm. One of your criticisms here in the U.S. has been that there are all kinds of problems with their being fed through the optical scan system and or an optical scan mm-hmm. system after they come in and being counted in the dark. Well, if our standards had been used in the Austria election, it would have been overturned because you can't bear. And it's very similar in the German High Court. I went back and looked at that again. That they've ruled that all electronic vote counting, mm-hmm. All forms of electronic vote counting, do not meet the criteria of their constitution because you have to have an observable count.
And I remember writing about that German decision at the time many years ago, and the idea that this this constitution that was put together after the Nazis gave up in World War II, that the U.S. actually went in and demanded that Germany create this constitution and have this type of transparency. They ended up with much more transparency, much more oversight former Nazis than we have in this country.
Well, as a matter of fact, my understanding is there was a former Supreme Court justice, or actually a Supreme Court justice at the time, that also participated in the Nuremberg, mm-hmm. Presided over the Nuremberg trials, that assisted Germany in coming up with these constitutional provisions. So it's interesting that the U.S. has directed input you had when you wrote about it, by the way, it was mm-hmm. back in 2009. You called it democracy's gold standard, which is hand-marked paper ballots publicly hand-counted at each precinct on election night.
You mentioned Ernie the case up in Oregon, where I know they love their vote by mail. They do all vote by mail elections up there in Oregon. But again, there was a place where just a couple of years ago, I want to say 2012 or 2014, I can't remember where. There was a Republican election official who was opening vote by mail ballots as they were coming in, and she was filling in votes for Republicans in races where there were no votes, where there was, an undervote. She would just go ahead and fill in the Republican. She was caught. She was arrested. But that's just one of the reasons why I'm no fan of vote by mail, other than in cases where somebody has to, where they're not going to, they're going to be out of town on election day, or they are disabled, can't get to the polls. But vote by mail opens up a tremendous amount of possibilities for fraud. Ernie, you've written it at the Brad Blog a long time, many years, where we've covered all manner of problems and concerns about elections, from voter suppression and vote buying and selling at the front end to problems counting the votes due to computer failure or fraud, and perhaps more importantly, the ability for the American public to oversee the tallies at all. And that was the concern in Austria. And that is true with both touchscreen voting and paper ballot optical scans. As an attorney, have you ever seen a principle akin to the one that has now been applied in Austria, applying to any American elections, where basically a court or an election official says, hey, if you can't oversee it, it can't be trusted? Does that even come into the thinking about elections in this country, as far as you've seen in all of these years?
If the courts had reached that ruling, we wouldn't be conducting the elections in the manner in which we are, because our elections are, by and large, not always, but by and large, opaque. And, the problem that you talked about in the Oregon election mm-hmm. was something they specifically addressed here. It doesn't have to be fraud that's involved, though.
Right.
You don't have to prove it. But where what they said was, it isn't just that they have to count the ballots as a collegial body, that the officials that are assigned to do this, two people, but that they have to take part in, no one else is allowed to even slit open the ballots. And you remember a few years back, we covered a Wisconsin Supreme Court election where they did order a hand count after the election, and when the ballots were gathered, you had all kinds of chain of custody problems with ballot bags having been slit open, and
yep.
you couldn't really verify that the the actual ballots that were being counted in the hand count were the ballots that were actually cast.
Hundreds of thousands of votes were coming in, and you could not prove the provenance of the election of the ballots that they were trying to hand count because the bags had been opened. Who knows where they came from? But we didn't care, and America didn't care, and Wisconsin didn't care. And this was the Supreme Court of the state of Wisconsin. That election was going to determine the balance of the court. Do you get the sense, Ernie, that nations around the world take the concerns of election fraud a lot more seriously than we do here in the U.S.? And if so, why is that? I mean, there seems to be this thinking that, elections aren't stolen here in the U.S., and yet they are all the time. We've got evidence of that all the time, and not just crazy conspiracy theories, claims of fraud, like many that we've seen over this past primary season that I've actually debunked on this program. But, real cases of fraud, real criminal conspiracies. Look at Clay County, Kentucky, for example, or cases where, look at Palm Beach County, Florida in 2010, where a number of elections were decided where the loser was announced to be the winner in like three different elections. Because the optical scan machine got it completely wrong. And yet, in this country, if you bring up concerns in the ability to oversee elections, people, particularly in the corporate mainstream media, but even in the progressive, in the liberal media, want nothing to do with that question. I am constantly attacked, even if I bring up the issue over at Daily Kos, when I bring up these very legitimate concerns and sometimes evidence of, actual miscounting. Why is that? It's a long question. I'm sorry.
I think that people have a tendency to be blind to this issue so long as their side wins. And that's not what election integrity is supposed to be all about. As you've been fond of saying over the years, that election integrity is not about left or right. It's about right and wrong. And what I found fascinating about this decision, it's hard to think of a result politically that could have been worse, which is that, you're basically allowing a Nazi a second bite at the apple. But from the standpoint of election integrity, this is what election integrity is supposed to be about. Get the count right.
Imagine that, a progressive Ernie Canning, and you'll find no one more progressive than him, standing up for the Nazis' right to have a second bite of the apple in the Austrian election. And I completely agree with you, Ernie. Before I let you go, there's been a lot of concerns. I don't want to get into all the details because we talked about a lot of them throughout this primary cycle this year. But there's been a lot of concerns about the results of the primary from Sanders supporters. You have been a very strong Sanders supporter, working as an advisor over there at vetsforbernie.org. As it relates to this Austrian case, and very quickly, I know it's unfair, but very quickly, your thoughts on the concerns from Sanders supporters this year about the outcome of the election between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton?
Well, the biggest question in my mind, if you look at, for example, what happened in South Carolina early on, and I think you covered an article I wrote about that, really citing one of our earlier pieces, mm-hmm. is that you had these primary elections being conducted on 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems. You don't have to have fraud. We've seen where I remember you covered years ago with the Dan Rather's report on these ES and SI Votronics, where their idea of manufactured in this Philippine sweatshop, and their idea of quality control was to pick up one of these sensitive items of electronic equipment and shake it.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it was John Gideon, who wrote at the time that there may not be any loose screws inside the machine, but anybody who thinks this is any way to run an election has a few screws loose.
Yeah.
So, and that's the problem here, is that if you look at this, you wouldn't have all this problem with divergence between exit polls, and people wouldn't be able to raise the issue of whether there is or is not fraud, or whether the results were or were not accurate, if we simply adopted democracy's gold standard and started counting ballots in person.
If not democracy's gold standard, then at least Austria's standard, because that allows us to oversee. And you're absolutely right, Ernie. It's I've been quite critical of a lot of the folks, the Bernie supporters this year, who have been claiming that this is a sign of fraud, or that is a sign of Hillary stole the election, or the DNC stole the election. The problem is, the evidence does not necessarily support that, but the evidence also does not necessarily refute that. And we end up with a system where we simply have to guess, was it right or was it wrong? Was it counted accurately or not? And I have long argued that the ability to not only have one's votes counted, but counted in a way that we can know they have been counted correctly, is what we have to have in this country. And without it, it's a grave threat to democracy. And I believe we are seeing that play out, as we have seen it play out this year, whether there's fraud or not in the Sanders-Clinton race. The fact that so many people believe there is the great concern. And I hate to say it, but the Austrian court got it right, where our courts have not. Check out Ernie Canning's piece on this at bradblog.com, headlined, "Austrian Court's Call for Second Presidential Election is a Victory for Election Integrity." And indeed it is. Ernie Canning, thank you so much for your work at Bradblog, and of course for your work for Bernie Sanders. I hope one way or another we will get to see you more soon at bradblog.com.
You're welcome, Brad.
All right. That's Ernest A. Canning. Follow his work at vetsforbernie.org, on the Twitters at Can, that's C-A-N-N, the number 4, I-N-G, Can for Ing, on the Twitters. And, of course, at bradblog.com. Yeah, I'm running late. Got to get out. I'm Brad. This is the Bradcast. All right. Yeah. No, I know. I got to get out. And Desi Doyen, it's your fault.
I know. I'm sorry.
It's your fault because you told me to play that Bill O'Reilly thing early and pushed everything back. So anyway, thanks to my producer, Desi Doyen. Sorry, this is a short segment. Thanks to producer Desi Doyen, to my guest today, Ernest A. Canning. And of course, to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other, download it at bradblog.com. Greatly appreciate you spending time with us. You can drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And find and follow me on the Facebooks and the Twitters at The Brad Blog. That's it. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.